大家就是一个做那么远，做了很久，做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜就当做一个周末来说，上夜 အဲ့ဒါတော့ငါတို့ကစားအဲ့ဒီနေ့ကအနေဖြူပါပါကျေးဇူးလာလေးရင်းဆက်ရှိတီကိုရှိပါလေအဲ့ဒါဒီဒါငါတို့ဘက်ကျေးဇူးလာလေးဒီကျေးခရရလမ်းနာတဲ့ကျေးဇူးစံပါနာကောင်းသူရှိပါရင်းနေရအနေကျေညုံမပကျေးဒီပါကကျေးကျေရှာရှေတောင်းခွန်တို့ညုံမကျေးဒီပါကဒီနေ့ရှင်လျာအနေဖန်ပါဘာရှိတူရကြီးအနေချလာဒီကျေးဇူးစံပြီးကြီး ညစေကျန်ရှိစံပါနကိချာညမေရီတေဇာငံကျွေးနေတာမသူကောင်းကြည့်ကြုံးနာလို့ပြောပိုင်နာတာဂျွန်လေထားရင်ဘုနုကမ္ဘာနေဘာလို့ပြောပိုင်နာတာတက်ကန်ချေလေဘုန်းကြီးညမောကျေဒီအနည်းပါကြည့်တွေ့ရှာရှေတာဒီမူတီကပါညုံတာကျန်နေအန်ဒီမှာကာကျေဒီနေဘုန်းကြီးကေဝကေချောကောင်းတို့တို့ကူလာဒီဒီကျေဝနာအနေ
Good morning. So last night we looked at the presentation on the Bodhisattva practice of abandoning one's home. So this is because one's home is the source of arisal of a tremendous number of minds of attachment and aversion and ignorance and the like. So here the exhortation is to remove ourselves from such an environment and go to a secluded environment, an environment where one is able to cultivate minds of the Dhamma. And having done that, then one is encouraged to re-engage or re-enter society and work for the welfare of others. However, wherever we happen to find ourselves, whether it is in an isolated place or within society itself, then wherever we are, that we need to engage in the same practice as all the bodhisattvas, and that is primarily in subduing our mind, subduing these afflictive minds, and cultivating the minds of the Dhamma, and thereafter engaging in virtuous activities to benefit others whenever we get the opportunity. So wherever we find ourselves, this is what we need to do. So now we're going to continue with the presentation. So we spoke here about in the second bodhisattva practice about abandoning one's home and going to an isolated place. So now in the third, we come to look at what an isolated place is. So the third practice of a bodhisattva is relying on solitude. By avoiding bad objects, disturbing emotions gradually decrease. Without distraction, virtuous activities naturally increase. With clarity of mind, conviction in the teaching arises. Cultivate seclusion. This is the practice of bodhisattvas.
Now,
The first line here, by avoiding bad objects, disturbing emotions gradually decrease. So this is similar to what we've been looking at in the preceding verse. When we find ourselves in our home environment and we're surrounded by many, by both our loved ones and other objects of attachment, then this mind of attachment ripens effortlessly, spontaneously. And therefore, being such as ourselves, who haven't yet trained and subdued our minds, then it's quite difficult to cultivate Dharma minds in a powerful and sustained way in such an environment. So if we remove ourselves, or we depart such a place and we go somewhere that's secluded, where we do not have many objects of attachment around us, then these minds will start to ripen less frequently and be weaker in nature. And then likewise, we won't meet many enemies, or those who, or to put it another way, those who prevent us from getting what we want, and thereby the minds of annoyance and frustration that follow from such encounters, these too will now start to ripen far less frequently, and when they do, will be of a far weaker. So this is the reasoning for those of us who haven't trained and subdued our minds to move away to a secluded place. Should the wish to enter into a secluded place, to go and, for example, to go and do some retreat, should that arise in us, then it's important that we understand clearly what motivation we should be engaging in such activity with. If we want to go to somewhere secluded because we want a break from the hustle and bustle of city life and all the problems and difficulties that we have, and we want to go somewhere that's quiet and relaxing so that we can just refresh and recharge, well, whilst that's very nice to do, that is not what we're talking about here. Rather, it's having come to recognize that the environment that we are in, because of the number of bad objects, or these objects that lead to the arrival of bad minds, that we encounter so frequently, we need to separate ourselves from those. And the reason to separate ourselves from those is not just to experience some temporary peace, but rather so that we can engage wholeheartedly and without distraction in the cultivation of virtue and strengthen our spiritual practice. So that needs to be the understanding with which we move into a secluded place. So we can liken, and once we are in a secluded place, our afflictions are going to ripen far less frequently and be of shorter duration and weaker in strength. And this then comes in conjunction with our virtuous practice, because as we have more mental space, then our virtuous practice, this will strengthen and grow in intensity. So we'll see a relationship between the two. As the afflicted minds weaken, the virtuous minds grow in strength. We can make an analogy with a block of ice. So we have this hard block of ice, but as the sun, the intensity of the sun grows, then this ice starts to melt. And as the sun gets hotter, the ice will melt even faster. So this is very similar to what we would experience if one enters into a secluded place with the correct motivation. And it's what we see here in this line with gradually decreasing. As these afflictive minds gradually decrease, then the minds of virtue will strengthen and increase. So this the situation that we find in our home life is of course something we all have experienced, in that how difficult it is to have a sustained period of mental peace. There's so many activities that we are involved with and people that we encounter and the like that leads to the arisal of minds of desirous attachment, or the arisal of the minds of anger and frustration and the like. So we have this kind of coarse experience of not having sustained peace within our home environment. The second line, without distraction, virtuous activities naturally increase. So what I've just referred to in the previous segment is about how this home environment that we have, we can see here how we struggle to have periods of sustained peace. And this is because of the tremendous number of distractions that we have, either through meeting people or through talking with people on the phone, or perhaps watching television and the like. We encounter objects continuously, whether material objects or people, we encounter objects continuously that lead to a disturbance of the mind, that lead to the arisal of the afflictive minds. And we're getting frustrated and annoyed by certain things, or we have the mind of a attachment, this mind of wanting. So all of this leads to the disturbance of a mind of peace. However, if we remove ourselves from such a distracted situation and we move to a peaceful environment, an isolated environment, then we won't be meeting many people. We won't be hearing from others. They won't have access to telephone us. We won't have the news or television and the like. So all these objects that lead to the arisal of the disturbing mind, they will be absent. Rather, the objects around us will be natural objects, and these tend not to disturb the mind nearly as much. Thereby, we'll be able to engage in practice without much distraction. Again, we know from our own experience of cultivating minds of Dharma in our home environment, with the even if we in a room on our own and we're sitting there with our eyes closed and we're trying to be concentrated, still there's a lot of sound around us. There'll be cars passing by outside, there'll be voices, we may hear television or conversation elsewhere, and all of this serves as a distraction. Our mind gets drawn to a conversation next door and engages with that conversation rather than with the object that we are trying to cultivate. So if we have removed ourselves from such a home environment to a isolated environment, then here we can engage in our Dharma practice with a much more concentrated mind because of the lack of the distractive objects. Through the lack of these objects and the distracting minds do not ripen so easily. And then we'll find ourselves in a position where we are able to fulfill our motivation of moving, of having moved to an isolated place, and that with that motivation of from the moment that we arise in the morning to when we go to sleep at night, to engage in sustained Dharma practice, in sustained cultivation of virtuous minds. And that is because we have now removed ourselves from these distracting objects. So there's a story here about a famous Lama previously in Tibet who entered into retreat. So this Lama was in retreat, and there was a mouse in his retreat hut, and it had eaten away a bit of the wall, and it would had taken some cloth and made a little nest for himself. So the Lama was sitting there in retreat thinking, oh, I should maybe go down into Lhasa and I can buy some cloth and I can close up that hole and make it more comfortable for the mouse. So yeah, with this Lama, he was sitting in an isolated place, trying to engage in the cultivation of the Dharma minds, but whilst physically present in retreat, his mind was still in Lhasa. There's another Lama who was in retreat at the same time, and this Lama had clairvoyance, and he was aware of the first Lama who was physically in retreat and physically engaged in acts of virtue, but his mind was still shopping in Lhasa. So this other Lama with clairvoyance was aware of this. So the Lama with the clairvoyance, he went to speak to the Lama who was the famous Lama who was in retreat. But before he could meet this Lama, the Lama's attendants stopped him on the road and said, "No, no, you can't go and visit our teacher now. He's in retreat." So the Lama with clairvoyance, he replied and said, "No, you're mistaken. Your teacher is not in retreat. He's actually shopping in Lhasa." So the distracted Lama, he came out of his retreat house and called the other teacher up, said, "Please do come up, you are correct. I may be sitting here physically, but I am distracted and my mind is really not here engaging in virtue." Then the two lamas were together, and the one with clairvoyance gave advice to the other lama and said, "Now that you're in retreat, you have this fantastic opportunity, and I really rejoice that you have created this opportunity, or you're taking this opportunity. But while you're here, be very aware, be careful, because distraction can still come." Then the third line here, with clarity of mind, conviction in the teaching arises. When one enters into retreat, free of all the distractions and comings and goings of normal city life, then one is able to discipline the mind and to start to develop the mind so it becomes focused. And with this, the mind, the clarity increases. So here, clarity can be likened to the water that one has in a mountain stream, where the water is so translucent that you can see very clearly through the water, almost as if it wasn't there. So one's mind, through being in an isolated place and utilizing that opportunity correctly, one's mind becomes clear like this. And through becoming clear and concentrated, then one is able to contemplate on the Dharma very effectively. So if one is contemplating, for example, on emptiness, one can come to a very firm and stable understanding of emptiness and how the paths work, and that the paths actually do bring the result that one aspires to. And so through contemplating with this mind of clarity, then conviction in the Dharma arises through the elimination of doubts and through the generation of experience. So in this way, conviction in the teachings also arises. When one enters in retreat, or in this isolated place, one may well have the motivation to develop calm abiding and special insight. So when these minds have been developed, then the development of these minds are marked by the attainment of a physical and mental pliancy, or service, and you could say the body and the mind become serviceable. So what this means is that with a very concentrated mind, one is able to investigate objects such as impermanence or emptiness and the like. Now we find ourselves in a very different position. So if we sit down to meditate, say on emptiness or impermanence, our mind is not serviceable, our body is not serviceable. And so what this means is when we sit and we cultivate an object to meditate on, say impermanence, then instead of with this concentrated mind analyzing from various aspects, our mind is distracted in all different directions. So instead of investigating in a profound manner, our mind is actually distracted all over the show. And this shows how our mind is not yet serviceable. And similarly, when we encounter problems and difficulties, the way we deal with it is often very unskillful, and our mind becomes hard and tight, and our mind becomes closed. Whereas if our mind has been developed and is serviceable, our mind will remain open and relaxed no matter what problems we encounter. And thereby we'll be able to transform those problems on the path that much more easily. And then secondly, with the attainment of calm abiding, one's body becomes serviceable as well. So we know when we sit, we get aches and pains all over in our knees, our back, and the like, and this becomes quite a distraction. However, once the attainment of calm abiding, once calm abiding has been attained, then one's body is also serviceable and no longer presents an obstacle.
ま、でね、あの、で、ローレス見るわけ。だね、やっぱ天地、死ねえ、出て、死ねえ、出て、死ねえ、出て、死ねえ、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出て、出
So again, yeah, when we've attained these minds of calm abiding and special insight, or the mind of calm abiding, then we are able to hold any object of our choice single-pointedly without distraction. And this shows again that our mind now has become serviceable, because without any difficulty at all, we can hold our object of choice. And similarly, our body, we have no aches and pains, we're not going to become so likely to become ill and the like. So therefore, this shows how our body also becomes serviceable. So we find ourselves in quite a different state. Our mind is very distracted, we have many physical obstacles and the like. However, if one attains calm abiding completely, then one's mind and body become serviceable.
Oh, didn't you get that?
And with the attainment of meditative equipoise, one is able to engage in analytical meditation in an undistracted manner. So when we try and do analytical meditation, whether it's on impermanence or another subject, then instead of looking at the object from a variety of different angles and over a sustained period going in more and more depth, looking at more subtler and subtler levels, we very quickly get distracted to other things. However, once calm abiding and special insights have been attained, when one is meditating with the mind of meditative equipoise on whatever object, whether it's impermanence, selflessness, or emptiness, then the mind is undistracted and is able to analyze in a detailed manner and analyze at subtler and subtler levels. So in this way now, with the mind becoming clearer, and this quality of clarity of mind being attained, then the object that one is meditating on, this too appears clearly, and one's realization of that object, that too is clear. So having a clear or a powerful realization, then one's conviction in the Dharma, this of course increases. So we have here conviction in the teaching arises, and that is due to the strength of the clarity of the realization.
Lam senior top in your mobile to work.
Since
I senior top jet in the game, I do that. New more to be new more to get my mellows to two in that. Nicky or Chima delay and go out here is in a palliative world, but then milk in your mind. Me and my son, milk in my palliative world.
If in this life we are able to attain calm abiding, then there are two paths or two directions that one can go in. So when one attains calm abiding, then the afflictions of the desire realm, they become suppressed. So at this point, the practitioner hasn't attained a path, so they have a choice. If they are non-Buddhist, they'll probably continue in this direction of suppressing further afflictions. And from this, the ripening result will be a rebirth as a god in their future life. However, the other direction that one can go in is once one has attained calm abiding, then the afflictions of the desire realm have been suppressed, and then one can choose to go in the direction of cultivating the paths. So in other words, cultivating the required required qualities so as to enter the first of the five paths.
Oh, that any gi that ni embatinchi ane du chine kejur kejur chup chine chup dene dene riba tamu chane kejur di yanghang gi pe dene gi che gi la len je di ane kese chenju sen ba nam mar ane hwa do chenju sen gyula ma gi ni la dene ane dong le du se ta embatin dene gi nyam len je dene kejur di yanghang gi pe wa da riba tamu che wa na dene chue ge shi je gi nyam len du sna wa des se da da
So in summary here, the purpose to rely on solitude, to enter into an isolated place, is so that one can engage wholeheartedly in sustained Dharma practice and generate minds such as calm abiding and special and the light and the like, generate a clarity or attain a clarity of mind and thereby have realizations that strengthen one's conviction in the Dharma. So this is something that we as people who have not yet entered a Mahayana path, we need to do. Because this was the practice that all the bodhisattvas of the past and of the present have engaged in. They entered an isolated place and they cultivated minds of calm abiding and special insights, and then thereby and or thereafter strove to develop the minds so as to attain a Dharma path. So this is the practice that all bodhisattvas have gone through, and we too need to engage in this practice of bodhisattvas. So having entered into an isolated place and attaining these minds of calm abiding and special insight, having suppressed the afflictions of the desire realm, then as aspirants to become bodhisattvas, we then need to cultivate these minds of the Dharma and cultivate the preceding steps so as to generate bodhicitta in our mind. So here we then need to accomplish minds such as love and compassion and the like. Once those have arisen and we have attained the bodhisattva paths and we now are counted amongst the bodhisattvas, then at that point we are ready to return from our place of seclusion and re-engage in society. And then we'll be able, whatever opportunity we have to help others, we'll be able to help others in a really a profound way, because the minds that will have dominance within us are now the other cherishing mind, the minds of love, the minds of great compassion, the mind of bodhicitta. So with these minds dominant, whatever activities we engage in to help others, such as teaching Dharma or other activities, they will be very successful and have a tremendous impact on others. And then furthermore, because of the abandonment of the self-cherishing mind and the dominance now of the other cherishing mind, then minds such as pride and anger, these aren't going to arise. And we'll be able to engage with others with the mind of patience present, with minds of love present. And in this way, we'll be of tremendous benefit to others.
当然对当不了中了，然后没得搞了中，那天呢，他们自己当不了，随便了，公布公布啊，现在，但就发觉的那个嘛，我现在是个工头嘛，那是困难的了哇。现在俺们当不了，但是，进来讲不了，其他现在，但当不了就讲不了，其他些，你现在俺们当这些的，嘛晓得，要不嘛你们那给的那年纪们呢，但考虑了我前面给的那，我讲讲清楚是那样子，远距离接触嘛，其他地方就麻将会干，干不的那也罢了。 念佛的都上当，上了的话，讲起来讲出来起来，你讲究什么解决？你说了的，但我说刚刚这个痛的呢，俺娘他为什么在痛的？在我年纪这个修车，修车着呀的，在那个这个没，独家这马龙把这个痛的呢，你来呀，那这个说不过面的，俺说不过人家们这个修车着的，在那个人家俺给叫俺给票。
The position we find ourselves in now, as practitioners who haven't yet studied well and trained our minds well, is that we have the aspiration to practice patience in difficult conditions, but the reality is our patience is somewhat limited, and we may try, but our patience isn't very durable. And furthermore, the group that we consider our group, so our own loved ones, our friends, our relatives and the like, for them we have the strong mind of attachment, and we mistake this for the mind of love. And we see how we mistake it when others then come to harm that circle that we consider our own, and then immediately the contrary mind, the mind of anger, the mind of repulsion arises for them. And this is the state that we tend to find ourselves in now, a position where these afflictive minds ripen so readily. So if we, understanding this, move to an isolated place, then these afflictions will subdue, and we'll have the opportunity to use this quieter situation, this quieter mental situation, to generate the minds of the Dharma, such as minds of calm abiding and the like, and thereafter minds of love and compassion and the like. And when we have done that, then thereafter, whenever we meet difficult people, people whose minds really are dominated by afflictions, our response will be so very different from what it is right now. We will immediately respond, we will spontaneously respond with a mind dominated by love and compassion for the suffering that is being experienced by this other person. Anger and annoyance and frustration will not ripen in us. Rather, a genuine mind of patience will be present, as well as minds of love and compassion. And in this way, when we then encounter difficult circumstances, having cultivated these minds, these Dharma minds in a powerful and sustained way, we will accumulate a huge amount of virtue, we will be of lasting benefit to these very upset and troubled beings, and through this accumulation of virtue, the attainment of the goal of Buddhahood will come that much closer.
对，俺做罗马枪完，咱俺做罗马枪完，那个啦，但没几当我学完了，恐怕现在没几个读起来了。那南山的人学马多些，南山俺就看了几下，当你就怕这结婚生的南山第二个罗马枪完，就那俺做的，俺做罗江说那第一个没完。 ແນ່ອັນແນ່ດາກັບຊາຍແມ່ນນະດັ່ງນັ້ນຈໍຫາຍແມ່ກັງບໍ່ຊູຍຸງກູອັນພາຊົນດອນດໍໂຫແລະກັງບໍ່ຊູດໍວ່າຖ້າທັບຊິກາເລີຍແລ້ວນະສໍສໍກວຍຫາງກໍດີອັນດີວ່າແລະຈາກິດິນດອກໍລະຈຽນທຸບໍ່ລະຈຽນຢາຊູມໍໄດ້ກວນຊາໄປນະດີກວນຊາໄປນະທີນີ້ກາຫໍດໍເບນະເຊມມາດິນະມະກະໄປນະສໍສໍກາຫໍກັງບໍ່ຈະດໍຊິນະເຊມມາຊູມາແລະກັງບໍ່ມາຊູມາແລະອັນປີດີນາຊິແຕ່ເຊມຈັ 제도 맨날 소소 녀버지가 용구를 콩으로 남아 용구를 안데 다 탑람 가려 그랬어. 그러면 소소기 뒤지면 뭐지게 봐 매버서 콩으로 쇠바 냠내지. 다 강비 월에 도발 마음 쇠바지 냠내 약고지. 소소기 뒤지면 뭐지게 마 매버서지. 니 도쇼 개와 쇠바다 전주 전에기 냠내지 샤바이나. 얘네 소소기 한국 건바 나신 다 간에 녀라 얘긴 누자 되겐지 여번에 나를 해서 都是也这么样刚刚用马来斯现在你也怕怕挂住判断起来的萝卜节你这几个马都嗯这是也真不是多话的刚刚的女儿的怕吃出现的你用马来斯现在你刚过来的多话节话拿心所以就给了嘴巴娘们的你就讲你这娘们的要不去问了现在刚好说的刚刚去马来斯
The situation we find ourselves now as practitioners with untrained minds is that whenever we encounter adverse situations, the minds of annoyance and frustration and anger, they ripen in us so quickly, they bubble up and dominate us so very quickly. So this situation that we're in now is a situation that we have to change. We have to abandon this situation where we are dominated by these afflictions, and we are almost defenseless against these afflictions. So in terms of what we could do about this and how we can deal with the situation that we're in, that whenever we encounter a difficult situation or a difficult person and things aren't going how we want them to go, that we immediately get annoyed and frustrated. The way to deal with this is to think about a famous verse from the Bodhisattva Shantideva. So here he spoke about how he likened all the problems and difficulties in the world to a place that is a land which is covered in thorns, and wherever one goes, one is walking on thorns. So here one has the option to either try and remove all the thorns from outside of oneself, or to deal with oneself, oneself. So this is likened, so the thorns that are surrounding us can be likened to the afflictive minds of others. So to remove all of these from the entire environment is something that is impossible to do. Likewise, for us to be able to eliminate the afflictive minds in someone else's continuum is impossible. It's not something that we can directly do. Rather, to go back to the analogy, if one were to put on leather shoes, then one could walk on the thorns and wouldn't be harmed. So similarly, if we were to subdue our own mind, if we were to become a master of our own mind and subdue these afflictions, then no matter what we encounter, what difficult situation we encounter, our response would be one of patience, our response would be one of kindness. And in this way, whatever we encounter, we wouldn't have any mental difficulties at all.
And then I
The situation that we're in now is that when we encounter difficult situations, then spontaneously a disturbed mind arises. So when things are not going how we want them to, whether it's with an inanimate object like a computer, or we're with someone and they're talking to us in an abusive manner, immediately our mind becomes disturbed. And if the situation progresses or continues for a little while, we are very likely to respond and respond in kind to the person who's maybe talking to us in a harsh manner. So this is the situation that we find ourselves in, and this is a situation that benefits no one and certainly doesn't help us towards the attainment of our Dharma goals. Rather, we should utilize the training that is within the Dharma to try and cultivate the minds of patience so that we can respond appropriately and that our mind itself can stay calm and peaceful no matter what we encounter. So for example, if we know someone who is mentally disturbed, when they're then acting in a way that it causes us some difficulty, maybe the way they're behaving or the way they're talking, because we recognize that they are mentally disturbed, then we are going to respond to them very differently from how we normally would respond to them. We remain much more open-minded towards the situation they're in because we understand that they are actually very afflicted and therefore they are acting without freedom. So if we take that understanding and we actually apply it to everyone that we encounter, understanding that everyone we encounter, despite wanting to only experience happiness and not wanting to experience suffering at all, is now acting under the influence of their own afflicted minds. And they're as perhaps speaking to us in a coarse way, but this is because they have attachment dominance in their mind, or they have anger dominance in their mind. And therefore, they too are without freedom, just like the person who is recognized to be mentally disturbed. So this person here, in a way, we can see is also mentally disturbed and is without freedom because their mind is dominated by afflictions. So thinking like this and being aware of this at the moment, we will not respond in our habitual way. We will rather have a mind of compassion for the suffering of the person before us. And we will thereby be able to respond to them, not in an equally abusive way with our own pride arising, but we'll respond to them with a gentle mind, with a kind mind, a mind wanting to diffuse the suffering that they are experiencing right now. It's a mind that is cooperative and wanting to help achieve the happiness of the other person. So this is how all the bodhisattvas of the past have trained, how all the bodhisattvas of the present are training, and we too need to utilize these opportunities that we have to cultivate the mind of patience and to train like a bodhisattva.
Mm-hmm.
So we've spoken now about the need to rely on solitude and what motivation one should have to go into solitude. So in other words, not just to have a break and enjoy a peaceful environment, but to engage in cultivating virtuous minds. And we've spoken about the benefits of relying on solitude. So what are the distinction characteristics of a suitable place to go to, as a place that is suitable to be a place of solitude? And here there's this is said in the Ornament of Mahayana Sutras by Asanga. So the author is Maitreya, and the verse is whomever amongst the wise gets a correct place of accomplishment, a wholesome place, a healthy place, and wholesome friends will possess the quality of yogic bliss. So first of all, having recognized the difficulty of trying to cultivate powerful and sustained minds of the Dharma within our home environment, we make the decision to move ourselves and go to an isolated place so as to be able to cultivate these minds. Then when it comes to selecting this isolated place, it needs to have certain characteristics, such as being far away from the hustle and bustle of ordinary life. But if it only has that characteristic, we will have many difficulties when we're there, because we will still need to eat, we'll still need to drink. So we need to be able to have access to resources that we need to sustain ourselves. So to bring these two in balance, being somewhere isolated but still being able to sustain ourselves through food and drink and the like, then one often needs helpers, or one needs an attendant, someone who will help us in at this isolated place. Someone who maybe can, in the winter or before the winter comes, bring us warm clothing, can bring us food from time to time, etc. So these are some of the qualities that an isolated place requires.
Kala
To have wholesome friends or to have someone who helps one in one's retreat really is essential, because we so as one can engage in an undistracted manner in one's cultivation of mind of the Dharma, one needs someone who will bring water, who will bring food, who will bring the other conditions that one requires. So to have such a helper, someone who is in accordance, who supports us in what we're doing, so both emotionally as well as physically or materially supports us in what we're doing, is very important. Then that person, that attendant or that helper, they accumulate a huge amount of merit through what they are doing, because they are a pivotal link in enabling the meditator to meditate in an undistracted manner. And Milarepa himself said that his attendant and Milarepa, the two of them together, will attain Buddhahood, and that is because of this very close relationship of dependency that the two of them have.
The
reasoning why the attendant actually creates so much virtue is because through enabling the meditator to engage in meditation in an undistracted manner, they are a very close part of the dependent arising of the whatever attainments the meditator accomplishes. Then on a more practical level, as the meditator progresses, then the attendant will be observing this, and this too will serve as inspiration for them in their own practice. And furthermore, the meditator will give advice and guidance to their attendant whilst in retreat, and thereby the attendant's own practice will also further and progress. And then once the possibly either during the retreat or maybe after the retreat, the yogi will start to teach and spread the Dharma and help other meditators and others in their practice, and they will accumulate virtue, and they and this virtue then will come back to not just to the teacher but to the teacher's helper as well. And then as these other meditators become more accomplished, they too will help have students and guide their students. And due to this relationship, this virtue will continue to come back to the teacher and to the teacher's attendant. So indirectly, the attendant will accumulate a lot of virtue like this through the efforts that the meditator makes, and then the meditator too will guide the attendant directly, and enabling the attendant to progress in their own practice as well.
That
And so, as always, the motivation is imperative. So the attendants here needs to have their motivation very clear. The motivation for attending is wanting the yogi to progress in their accomplishments. So wanting them to progress on the Dharma paths, to suppress and eventually eliminate the afflictions and progress towards the state of becoming a foe destroyer. And so the attendant needs to have this as their heart wish, that the meditator progresses and develops. But not only that, the reason that they should want the meditator to develop is not out of attachment for the meditator, it's their close friend or their relative, but rather so that the meditator can become accomplished and help and guide others. So through their own the meditator's own personal development, that they then can help others overcome their suffering situation and overcome their situation of being dominated by the afflictive minds and help others in their Dharma progression. So to bring this motivation down, the motivation of the attendants down into a nutshell, they really need to have the other-cherishing mind as their motivation. And if their motivation is this other-cherishing mind, wanting others to experience benefit, and others being the limitless number of sentient beings to receive benefit from their actions, then this is the motivation of the other-cherishing mind. And from that, a tremendous amount of virtue is accumulated. So just to read this verse again, whomever amongst the wise gets a correct place of accomplishments, a wholesome place, a healthy place, wholesome friends, will possess the quality of yogic bliss. So now to look at this, a wholesome place. So what makes, so it's another condition that is required is that the place of isolation should be free of bandits and robbers and thieves and the like, so that one can engage in one's isolated place without having any concern about physical harm coming to oneself. And another requirement is that it's a healthy place, a place free of disease. So the water is clean, the ground is clean, and it's a place that is free of disease. Because of course if one is ill, then it's much more difficult to engage in one's practice. So another requirement is it needs to be a healthy place, and the one before was a wholesome place.
Then
And the next requirement here, wholesome friends. So this is similar to what was mentioned before, where one's attendant needs to be someone who you are harmonious with, someone who's working for with the motivation that we discussed earlier. So with such a motivation, they will ensure that you always, the meditator always has sufficient nutritious food, that they have water to drink, that whatever cleaning and washing needs to be done, this will be taken care of, etc. And the relationship will be a conducive relationship, a relationship free of unnecessary conflicts and the like. And this then too helps one's time in the isolated place be beneficial and fruitful. Furthermore, the natural environment should be a place that's naturally peaceful, so the one isn't surrounded by thorn bushes or by flocks of noisy birds or near a noisy road or noisy waterfall, because these will all serve as further distractions and further hindrances for oneself. Someone who with a good motivation to go into retreat or go into an isolated place, they need to go into a place as has been described here, with an attendant, someone to help them, with a good motivation, a place free of disease, free of thieves and the like, and where the natural environment is also quiet and conducive. And then if they have these good conditions, then it is likely that their practice, if they apply themselves diligently, will turn out well.
Then you need to
So now we've looked at the requirements that a place of isolation requires for it to be conducive. And once there, then one needs to start cultivating the appropriate minds. And so, as we've seen in the presentation on the Lamrim, one first starts with thinking about one's precious human rebirth, and then moves on to the impermanence of this opportunity. And then thinking about this impermanence of this opportunity and our future rebirths, what may come, one continues one's thinking through the Dharma, and then the strong wish arises that it's imperative that I utilize it, whatever remains of this opportunity, that I utilize it as well as possible. If I don't attain liberation in this life, then there's no certainty that I will have such a good opportunity or an opportunity as good as this in my next life. Therefore, it's imperative I use whatever remains of this opportunity in the best way possible. And how to do that? I have to enter a path, I have to attain a path and progress to the attainment of liberation and enlightenment and the like. And how to attain a path? One needs calm abiding. Because without this mind of calm abiding and special insight, one's meditation is not stable. It's not stable. One is continually drawn to other objects, continuously distracted. So coming to understand, going through the sequence of thought, one comes to the understanding that I need to attain calm abiding so that the other realizations of the path, such as love and compassion and the like, these can be attained in a powerful and a sustained manner. In this text we hear about this term practice of bodhisattvas quite often. So what is the practice of a bodhisattva? Well, the practice is the work of a bodhisattva. So we all have our own individual work that we engage in. And so the work of a primary work of a bodhisattva is their practice. So here, in this context, the practice of a bodhisattva is to rely on solitude. And here, having seen now what this entails, we should generate the aspiration to practice in the same way as all the bodhisattvas of the past and present are doing. Once we've entered into solitude and we've cultivated the minds of calm abiding and the like, and we've been able to generate great love and great compassion in a powerful and sustained manner, then we are engaged to take this our practice of the bodhisattva back into society, and then engage with others in a way that is truly meaningful, in a way that is truly beneficial.
Mm. 今年在今年给他进步下来了呀，那你也不吃怕讲多少钱，讲多少钱，今年什么进步也不差了，今年把哪里我是带人去，刚刚开始拆了，对了，学校学习不点读过了，人家解决的也蛮难的，别读过了，你讲就什么，讲就什么，你也不点差了些，那么，就说嘛，别些，你给讲话就是什么，解释就是什么，那么去拆了那啥的，哪里的，是不啦的。
We can make an analogy with sport or exercise. So if someone has the motivation to engage in to play some sport because they want to be healthy and have a good time, then they will do so and it will achieve that purpose. But if the same person generates a very different motivation, a motivation of wanting to be the very best that they can, then the training that they will put into their sport will be completely different, and they will dedicate themselves wholeheartedly. And then once their training is complete and they come to perform in a stadium before many people, people will be inspired and amazed by what they are able to do. And so there's a very clear difference here. We have the same activity of the sport, but the amount of training that has gone into it is completely different. And then preceding that is the motivation. That too is completely different. And from that then you go to the result, and the result then is completely different. So here we can bring this now to our own Dharma practice. So if we have the wish to engage in Dharma practice, we can generate these two differing motivations. The motivation to do what I can now within my environment, or to do something that is actually takes me to the level of a Buddha, takes me to what as a being I can actually achieve, to achieve the very maximum that is possible. So Both through these two very different motivations, the practices are the same. One studies, one meditates, etc. But the motivation is so very different. The one person is doing what they can in the situation they have. The other is trying to be the very best that they possibly can, with the understanding that when they reach a stage of attainment, then they can re-enter into society and engage with others in a way that is truly amazing and beneficial to others. So in the same way that famous sports people have an impact in society through generating delight in what they do and amazement at what is possible, in the same way, someone with a bodhisattva aspiration who enters into isolation, cultivates these minds of bodhicitta and the like, when they re-engage in society, the way they can interact with people and be of benefit to others is vastly different and of vast great value. There's a quote here from Shantideva. Thus, having generated weariness for desire, generate joy for isolation. If one takes the teaching and reflects on the teaching and seeing how in one's home environment there are so many objects that we encounter continuously that lead to the arousal and the stimulation of our afflicted minds, minds of attachment, minds of aversion, etc. We see that then this not only does it destroy any hope of mental peace, but we then engage under the influence of these minds and we accumulate negative karma, we encounter difficulty upon difficulty and the like. Thinking about this, we generate a mind that is just disenchanted for this life, a mind that is disenchanted for the the lack of opportunities that we have and the opportunity that we really have that is being wasted. So generating this mind of disenchantment, a wish to for the mind of definite emergence, this mind of definite emergence then starts to arise. And accompanying this mind of definite emergence, the wish to go into isolation, that mind arises. So with this disenchantment for the meaningless activities of the world, comes the mind of definite emergence and the mind wishing to be in isolation so that one can generate the actual mind of the Dharma in a powerful and stable way.
Yeah. タイムバーでね、川地是でにぎね、エンバチリア、ニャメチュアリアンでね、ファズセムリア、タタがでにごがやごしゅうしゅうそうたんね、エンバチでにぎニャメチュアで、やご、ラスシュ、ごはびしゃそうすんびげやねやんでセムリア、川地をね、川地。でね、川地ね、川地はさだ、やねやんで川地やで、んだ、ちく、とばにゃめんげじょでるつんびげ、つんびじ、く、しゅうしゃしゃ、なしゅうしゅうしゅうしゃとこれ。
全然一緒、全然一緒、全部なんだか、こう、ジャワで全然違うもんは、ジャワなんだか、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で、何で from the Bodhisattva's way of life again. Thus, having generated weariness for desire, generate joy for isolation. Once one has attained your heartfelt wish of entering into an isolated place, then it's important to generate this mind of joy repeatedly, because through generating joy about what we have attained, one will value it that much more. And with this valuing of the situation that we now have attained, one will want to use it as best as one can. So with this, this mind of joyous perseverance will arise and will strengthen. So why this mind then of joyous perseverance is so important is because joyous perseverance is the mind that delights in virtue. So one will want to, in your isolated place, one will want to engage in meditative practice. And thereby, the attainment of minds such as calm abiding and the like become that much more achievable.
And
the commentary continues with, in that way, all the conquerors of the three times have relied in the correct manner on a solitary place for obtaining peace. So here, the conquerors of the three times refers to all those who have become Buddhas in the past, those who are training right now to become Buddhas, in other words, those who are on the Bodhisattva paths, as well as the large mass of beings who will eventually, in the future, will enter the Bodhisattva paths and become Buddhas. So all of these beings, whether in the past, the present, or the future, they need to practice in this way. They need to rely on isolation, to withdraw themselves into an isolated place and cultivate the minds of the Dharma in a way that is powerful and stable. Once that is done, then they too all return within society and they can engage in acts and beneficial deeds directly with sentient beings who require these developed teachers. So this is how all the Buddhas of the past and the present, as well as those of the future, are practicing. And this too is therefore how we should practice. So this is advice that we should take personally, that if we want to be counted amongst the children of the Buddhas, if we want to be counted amongst the Bodhisattvas, that we ourselves need to engage in the practice of the Bodhisattvas, as is advised here. So hearing this, it should remind us of the preciousness of this physical basis that we've attained, because on the basis of this precious human rebirth, we can engage in, we can follow this advice, and we can accomplish the bodhisattva practices. If we had been born in the lower realms, or those who right now are suffering in the lower realms, it is inconceivable that they could engage in any of these practices, because they may hear sounds of teachings, but they will have no understanding, they'll have no recognition of the meaning of what has been said. And even if they could, their minds are not stable enough that they can contemplate and cultivate the minds of the Dhamma. So therefore we need to remind ourselves of the preciousness of this physical basis that we have attained.
We've looked here at this verse on relying on solitude, and just to remind you here, this quote from Shantideva, thus having generated weariness for desire, generate joy for isolation. So this mind of generating joy is really something that we should do. Generate a mind of rejoicing in the opportunities that we have attained. We have this precious human rebirth. We have the opportunity to receive teachings, to think about the meanings of teachings, and to give rise to the aspiration to abandon the affairs of this world and enter into isolation. So this is something to rejoice in, and it's important that we do so.
Mm-hmm.
In our next rebirth, whether we will attain conditions such as we have right now, this is something that we really have no idea. That our next rebirth will come, that death will come, and that death will come at a time not of our choosing. This is something we can be certain about. Where we will be reborn, this is completely unknown to us. So recognizing that fact, it's important to now right here, on one hand, rejoice in the opportunity that we have attained, knowing how very rare and fortunate we are. And this is something to generate a mind of great joy about. And then having generated a mind of joy right here, right now, to make this firm commitment to utilize whatever remains of this opportunity we have, to utilize this commitment so as to ensure that the rest of this life turns out well, and in particular, that our future lives continue to go well.
So today we've looked at what the meaning of isolation is, and we spoke about the requirements of an isolated place. It needs to be far away from town, wholesome environment, etc. But the meaning of isolation in brief, whether one actually finds oneself in a busy city environment or whether one in a secluded place in the countryside, is that we need to isolate our way of thinking, isolate our mind from distraction. So here, wherever we find ourselves, whether it is in a retreat place or whether it's in town, we need to be aware of our mind. And aware of the minds that are, we need to be aware of our mind. And when the minds are afflicted, we need to apply the antidotes, and we need to then generate the virtuous minds. So this is the real meaning of isolation, and this is appropriate or applicable wherever we happen to find ourselves. And so to help us do this, we need to make this strong commitment that
we will not harm others in any way. We will, in the same way that we do not want to be harmed by others, we will not respond to others or deal with others, relate to others in a harmful way at all. We will make the commitment to keep our mind gentle and to respond to others in a way that's gentle and pleasing and beneficial. And we make this commitment to everything we do to be in accordance with the Dharma and to keep our mind in particular in accordance with the Dharma and relate to others with our body and speech in a way that is in accordance with the Dharma, and thereby accomplish virtue through our body, speech and mind in everything that we do. Furthermore, we should think about the six perfections and think about and contemplate their meaning repeatedly so that our mind becomes so much more familiar with them that they then start to pervade our speech and our actions. And if we do this, then we are engaging in the practice of bodhisattvas. And so then this afternoon we'll start with the fourth practice, which is what we've looked at before in the Lamrim, the presentation on death and impermanence. So some questions. Steve.
Earlier on, you mentioned developing, attaining calm and abiding, then one can develop five qualities, one to the past.
Mm-hmm.
And those five qualities.
To attain calm and abiding into the five.
After attaining calm and abiding, one can then develop the five qualities to enter the past.
Okay. Okay, so what are these five qualities to enter the path? Okay. Then I'm not sure what this five was, so if I said that, then that was an error. So once one has accomplished the minds of calm abiding and special insights, so the union of the two, then when one has this mind of when one has this meditative equipoise that is the union of calm abiding and special insight, then to enter into a Buddhist path, then one needs to cultivate the mind of definite emergence. So that is the first, or the realization that is the gateway to the Buddhist path, this mind of definite emergence coming on the basis of the union or karma abiding a special insight. However, if someone who has this the karma abiding special insight, they rather look now to the conditions that the gods experience, that they have fantastic conditions, no suffering, long lives, etc., and they desire, they have attachment for that and desire for that, then they can continue to cultivate this mind, their minds of karma abiding and special insight, to attain a result like that. And that, of course, isn't the Buddhist path. So for us as Buddhists, then after the attainment of the union of karma abiding and special insight, we need to acquire the mind of definite emergence. So should we put energy into seeking a place of isolation or to accumulating virtue, with the understanding that if we accumulate and purify, such a place will easily come our way?
In terms of the question specifically, then here you need to look at your own circumstances, and because through having accumulated and purified a lot, it does become that much easier to find such a place. But at one point, one does need to find such a place. So you need to look at your own situation, whether the merit and purification has been done sufficiently so that now you can find such a place, or whether you need to engage in further accumulation and purification. And then Kenro also said, what he mainly said, was that a place of isolation doesn't necessarily have to be up in the mountains, away in the forest. It can be one's own home, one's current home, depending on the environment one has there. Because the word in Tibetan for a place of retreat is tsamladesa, so a place by a border.
So he's talking about this word now, border. So what border refers to is a border when you are on this side of the border, you're in your retreat area, you're away from the activities. So this could be your home, depending on one's home. And the second meaning of this border is that one is away from one's afflictions. So we now enter into retreat, wherever that may be, and the distracted, busy life is over there. And now we're here, and we're making extra effort to guard against the arisal of afflictions and to engage in the cultivation of virtue. So, in brief, to think about retreat, it has this meaning of a border, and this is both physical and mental. Thank you.
Thank you.